Melissa in the Morning talks with career strategist and workplace expert Julie Bauke. It's Julie on the Job. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
They were peaceful, they were orderly, and meek. These were not insurrectionists, they were sightseers.
Nikki Haley is in her prime, sorry. When a woman is considered to be in her prime in her 20s and 30s and maybe 40s.
What are you talking about?
That's not according to me.
Prime for what?
Ooh, yeah. So these are two very controversial on-air anchors. The first was Tucker Carlson of Fox News, and the second, Don Lemon of CNN, both out of a job today. And instead of talking about the politics, whether you like these hosts or you do not, the bigger question here is what can we learn from what happened in the last 24 hours? In today's world of social media and even what you're saying at work through text message or email, how should you be handling yourselves professionally, not just during the job, but after you've been terminated? So we have Julie Bauke here of Julie on the Job to really dive into this story today. And she joins us now. Hey, Julie, how are you?
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me start my morning by throwing up in my mouth
no,
by hearing
don't
Lemon
that.
Say
know.
That 51-year-old Nikki Haley's beyond her prime. And then doubling down on it by saying women are in their prime in their 20s and 30s. Man, I'd fire him for that.
Yeah, I remember when that was said, and I believe he was suspended. He was taken off the air for that for a while. But,
yeah,
I mean, the two of them, to be honest, you know, again, regardless of people's political views on this,
sure,
I want to look at the way that, I mean, because I talk a lot about just how the news is handled in general. Being a news reporter, it sickens me that we've gotten to the point that we allow actually a lot of people to be like the two you just heard from. Honestly, from both sides of the aisle, we have a lot of on-air talent that would rather spread opinions and manipulate their viewers or listeners. And so, I mean, we could do a whole different segment on that.
Yeah.
But I'd rather focus on, I love your topic today, Julie, which is how should we be professionally handling ourselves, not just at the workplace, but after being terminated? Because both of these individuals did not handle themselves great during their time on air, but also when they were terminated just minutes after, both took to social media and it wasn't a great look for either of them.
No, and they both hired a lawyer. From what I understand, it's the same attorney.
Interesting. You know, I didn't know that.
All of this comes down to one simple calculation. We can speculate all we want, but it comes down, and believe me, as you know, people have been the last day. But your employer makes a calculation every day. Are they better off with you or without you? And that's really what it comes down to, regardless of ratings, regardless of – now, that'll go into it, of course – regardless of everything else. Are we putting ourselves at risk by keeping you on as an employee, and does that risk outweigh the reward? And it's whether you are a media figure, whether you are someone who is causing trouble maybe as a man and the way you're treating women or vice versa, whether it's sexual harassment, whether it's any of those things, it's a simple calculation. There's the plus column of having you stay on board, and there's the minus column. That's all it is. And a lot of stuff goes into that calculation. But in both of these cases, their employers decided we are better off without you moving forward. And it's, you know, we can wring our hands, clutch our pearls, pound our fist on our desk, but it's that simple. And you, in that situation of decision-making, might make a different decision about these people, but it's not your decision.
Mm.
And so it's really, if you think about it, every termination, whether you are Joe Blow or the outgoing president of NBC Universal, who had an inappropriate relationship and was also terminated yesterday, whether it doesn't matter who you are, the company decides, are we better off with you or without you? Now, you've got Tucker Carlson, Don Lemon, and this Jeff Shell from NBC Universal. That decision, as those decisions played out, it certainly attracted much more attention than Joe Blow down the street being laid off.
Sure.
And so it's done, and those three are done in a very public forum because they were very public, very
figures.
High-level
mm-hmm.
figures. And there's there are challenges that go with that, because the blowback, certainly on all three organizations, and by blowback I mean people who vehemently disagree, but then you also have on the other side people who are cheering.
Right.
And so that's part of that calculation when you're deciding if someone should stay.
So then, Julie Bauke, why does it matter what you post after you've been terminated?
The day they tell you, you don't need to come back the next day. It is not about Tucker Carlson of Fox News or Don Lemon of CNN. It is about you, the individual, and what your next move is.
So you're saying you lost that identity of being I am the highest grossing, because that's the thing, is Tucker Carlson is probably one of the highest grossing anchors at Fox News.
Yeah.
His program was probably one of the more successful ones next to Hannity. And then, but you're saying as soon as they said you're not a part of us anymore, you are now just, you're just Tucker. You're not who we all, because you're out of a job. I see. So you're starting
from
scratch, essentially.
And you have to decide, what does that mean? Am I going to be go on social media and just rip my employer a new one and do all these things and, you know, threaten to throw people under the bus and blah, blah, blah? Or am I going to keep my mouth shut? Because you can't change what's been done. And so if you go out there and start running your mouth, what are you doing, unless you're trying to build your legal case? But you know, I advise people that I talk to, even if you were treated poorly by your former employer, I love the saying, living well is the best revenge. So what are you going to do next? And how can you protect your brand, your reputation, how people see you as you move on to your next thing? Because the world is watching. So when a 25-year-old or a 22-year-old is let go from a job and goes nutso on TikTok about being let go and just really a very scorched earth approach, other employers, first of all, that's forever. It's never going away if you go out there and do that. And your future employers are watching your behavior and deciding whether it is worth it for them to take you on based on all of your past, you know, all of your past, but including how you've handled the bad news of being let go. And, man, I am such a fan of the high road, even though it's really painful, because everything, you know, in those moments of frustration, in those moments of I'm going to strike out, it is forever. And is that how you want to move forward? And, you know, it's sometimes people can't help it, but it just makes me cringe, because I know you want to, you have another act after this. And so you want to make yourself, you want to give yourself as many options as possible. And part of that is not just based on the ratings you were able to deliver for your last company, but it's also how your reputation, how people see you, and also how you have behaved in the world.
How you handle yourself.
Prior to and since your dismissal.
So Julie Bauke for Julie on the Job is here. We're talking about how you should be handling yourselves after you are terminated from a job, even if your employer did not treat you well, and why that's going to matter going forward. Julie, we are living in a world right now, as you know, where there are so many openings, whether it's teachers, healthcare, police, mail, engineering, manufacturing. So there's a lot of sectors where we are desperate for good quality talent. What do you say to especially the postgraduates who are saying, listen, I'm more technology forward. I'm willing to work. I don't care the hours. I'm younger. I'm probably cheaper. But who cares what I post on social media? For people who have that mentality, especially if they're going into a sector where you are desperate for great workers, but maybe they don't have the best social media platforms, like they don't have the best look online, a little controversial, if you will, what do you say to them? Do you still think it makes that big of a difference?
You know, it's and we always have to be realistic. Supply and demand applies very much in hiring. And when we're in a time when there are fewer of people to do jobs, employers will overlook things that they wouldn't in a tight job market. And so in 2008, it was very different. Employees would put up with a lot, because the employer's attitude was, go ahead and leave. There's a whole line of people who are willing to take over for you. And so to have that attitude, it's dangerous to think, well, it doesn't matter what I do because I have skills they want. That may not always be the case. And with technology, with social media, everything you do and say is findable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I am grateful that social media wasn't around when I was in my 20s.
Same.
Because I'm certain, excuse me, that everything I did and said would not be appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, again, why even risk it? I think that's the big thing is if you're going to use social media, which, again, I think if we go back to really the purpose of social media and if young people start to even adopt the idea that social media is supposed to be a way to connect with people, a way to post photos, a way to learn content, you know, things that you're passionate about, maybe we'd even get away from things like more online bullying and things like that. I mean, if people would just cool it in general and in what you know, like I think there's so much turmoil on social media, which is why it's become so controversial in some ways, not all, but I think we've totally abused those platforms. Like Facebook was supposed to originally be a way for you to connect with your cousins who live out in Ireland, or it was a way to stay in touch with your elementary school friends who now live out in California. It has become, though, a breeding ground for attacking and bullying and calling people out and shunning people. I mean, we totally abuse the platform as a society. And so I think that idea of it's fine to say and do whatever I want online, it's never going to bite me in the butt later, is just not accurate. I think that's just become too normal. And so we have to kind of go back to the basics a little bit. Like I remember taking a course when I was at my high school as a senior. That's when Facebook was launched, when I was a senior in high school. And they said, look, I don't know, you know, what this is going to become. I can remember it clear as day. They said, but you better be very careful what you put online because you never know if future employers are going to see it. And actually, Krista, Julie, I was just talking to my social media consultant, Krista, about this. It was amazing because I remember one of the girls who had graduated, she had posted something that was somewhat controversial and the college dropped her. The college had accepted her and they said, no, we're all set. We don't need someone. And I will never forget that happening. This was someone who was like going to a Division I school for softball. I mean, brilliant, straight A's. And they said, you know what? We saw your platform and it's a no. And this was when Facebook was just becoming a thing. And so I think we've gotten away from that. We don't see that punishment happen too often, that people don't think it's that big of a deal.
You know, yeah, but employers will definitely Google you.
Yeah.
And that's
I think so.
Why a lot of times you'll see younger people have not their real name, maybe their first and middle name.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's
media.
True.
Employers, potential dates. I mean, people, what you put out there is generally, think about like an iceberg. So just the tip sticks out above the waterline. Mm-hmm. That's what people see about you. And you may be a lovely person, but the evidence that you have chosen to put out there that people can find may say otherwise. And, you know, we all do stupid things when we're young, all of us, and some of us never learn. And so I think there's some consideration for that. And it kind of depends on, you know, what it is, what you said, and how that aligns with the company or the organization's values. And it's just, you know, we can warn people all we want. But there's still this. So you look at like the president of NBC Universal who was having an affair. How many affairs have we seen by powerful men?
Too many.
Having affairs inside their organizations.
All day
and
long.
They somehow think they'll never get caught. Same right. With teachers having things with students.
Students, yeah.
I mean, it like a month doesn't go by where you don't see a couple of teachers being arrested for inappropriate relationships with students, male and female. Male teachers and female teachers, but somehow they think they're not going to get caught. And so our sort of like our common sense goes out the window and we think we're special because everybody else gets caught but us.
Yeah.
It never works out for you. But we see people, despite all the evidence to the contrary, doing dumb things over and over again and not only ruining their employment situation, but also their relationships and their future prospects. And it's just, you know, the head slapper.
It really is. And Julie, before we run out of time, my understanding is you have a new program on your website, a career happiness start to finish program. What is
it? Catalyst. Yeah, it's called the Career Catalyst. And it's for people who are employed, unemployed, of all ages, professions, and industries, who don't know what they want to do next. It's entirely start to finish. You will go through it. If you went through it start to finish, it would take you about half a day, but I don't recommend that. I recommend that you take some time and think, because there's some pretty profound questions.
Mm.
And my goal was to make that available to as many people as possible who are feeling stuck. And so it's under $100. So that's how cheap it is.
That's amazing.
And I'm doing that because I want people to, in the, I do all the videos, so it's literally like more Julie Balkey than you ever thought you needed.
And luckily, people love you, so that's fine.
Workbooks, career template. I mean, I'm sorry, career plan templates. If you go through the whole thing in earnest and really take your time and think about it, at the end of it, you will either have a career plan drafted or you'll have the beginnings of one. And it's yours to keep. I mean, this program is, you buy it under $100, it is yours to keep. And it works whether you are between jobs or sitting at a big company trying to decide how to navigate the company.
Mm.
And we also have an organization version for people to bring in for their teams. And so they can put the tools of career management in the hands of their people, which is where it belongs. And there's a link to it on my site, The Balkey, and it's B-A-U-K-E, thebalkeygroup.com. It's right front and center. It'll give you all the information you need. But we just started rolling it out a couple weeks ago. The feedback has been fabulous, which warms my little heart.
That's really exciting. And again, it's great that this is offered to anybody. So anybody here in Connecticut can access it. That's great.
Anybody. And keep going through it 100 times over the next 20 years if you need to, because it is the path. It is the pathway. It is the roadway. It is the map. It is how you figure your career out. And it's hard. Of course it is. Everything worthwhile is hard. But I'm asking some questions that you may not have thought about before, but it will help you with that self-insight and clarity, and then help you see what that path might be.
I think this is a fantastic thing that you could use, a really great resource. So again, the website is The Balkey Group, and that's B-A-U-K-E, thebalkeygroup.com. And Julie Balkey, always appreciate that we decided to partner up so long ago and that we're still working on this show. I think it's fantastic. You're so great.
Thank you. Now stay out of trouble between this week and next week. And next week I'll actually be on Eastern time.
Oh,
so I will not
exciting.
Have a froggy voice.
No, that's okay.
Time on Eastern time.
Well, I look forward to it. And don't worry, you never have to worry about me getting into trouble. I think the worst thing I do is I post what my favorite Disney character is, and some people don't agree. And that's okay. I'm fine with that. I will own it till the day I die. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Julie, always appreciate it. Thank you so
Take
much.
Care.
Julie on the Job here on WICC. YouTube had announced changes to its guidelines on handling content, which was linked to eating disorders. This was last Tuesday. The social media platform is facing increasing scrutiny over their impact on the mental health of young users, very similar to what we're seeing for a lot of social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, you name it. So the new policy is expanding upon YouTube's existing rules that ban content glorifying or promoting, in quotations, eating disorders. The Google-owned streaming platform announced this in a blog post last week. Content about eating disorders showing the imitating behavior like purging after eating, severe caloric restriction, and weight-based bullying based on eating disorders were also eliminated. YouTube said it would take context into consideration when deciding to take down videos and still allow eating disorder content, but only if it is educational, documentary, scientific, or artistic with certain restrictions. It says educational or artistic content on eating disorders may still be deemed inappropriate for all ages. YouTube may actually restrict their viewing only to people who are 18 or older. Krista is our social media consultant. She does not work on YouTube specifically, but I wanted to get her professional sort of opinion on this and really understand the weight of this big change for YouTube. So, Krista, what did you think when you first saw YouTube's announcement last week?
I guess I wasn't surprised. I mean, this has sort of been, you know, the seedy underbelly of social media for a long time. And I think people are searching for information and I'm not a professional and I'm not expert in eating disorders and other mental health sort of situations, but there is a sort of, let me show you how it's done mentality out there, right? Because they're trying to normalize it and things like that. And I think this is a good way to try to cut back on that, because you're influencing kids maybe before they even have fully progressed into a critical sort of stage of this, right? Is it giving them ideas?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know that it's going to solve all the problem, but I think there's other factors that can help these kids. But I guess it's definitely positive that they're acknowledging it.
Yeah, I mean, and the platform did say that these new policies were developed by partnering with groups like the National Eating Disorder Association. So we understand why this specific sector of content is being covered, because there were obviously pushes from organizations like the one I just mentioned, or Be Eating Disorders, for example, saying, listen, you know, when you have what you were alluding to, Krista, when you have kids who are searching eating disorders, they shouldn't be getting mixed content. If they're getting educational content or documentary content or things that are of fact or are of merit, that's one thing. But when you're getting, you know, people who are saying, hey, you know, I didn't eat for 5 days straight and look how skinny I was before prom, that's not good content. That's promoting, that is advertising something, that is information that kids will, if in fact they're going to digest that a whole lot more than they're going to digest, hey, here are the health dangers, here is why you shouldn't engage in this. These are red signs. Like, no teenager is going to watch that second video over the first.
I agree. And I also think it's also about the attitude and the desensitizing some of this can have on, you know, you start to normalize fat shaming. You sort of normalize, you know, these ideas that
it becomes,
you know, your
appropriate.
Body has to be,
you're right.
Yeah. And I think the other thing we have to realize is that many times the quote unquote influencers, the people or the subjects of these videos, the people who are making them, oftentimes they're out to sell something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and sometimes it gets linked, and they're doing it. And here's the other thing. They're doing it to boys, too. So we can't delude ourselves into thinking that it's just young girls.
Agreed.
Who are tripped up by this. Eating disorders, from my understanding, has grown a lot when it comes to adolescent boys. And that's often not thought about. But, you know, you have some influencer who's sort of promoting a quote-unquote diet and all the reasons you should be on it. And then, oh, lo and behold, they have some sort of supplement or, you know, they have an affiliate relationship with a product that makes them money when they do it. So, like,
right.
There's all kinds of different levels. But I think, I mean, I remember when Instagram came out and Twitter, too, like, they called it Pro-Anna. Do you remember that?
Where I do, vaguely.
And you know, a lot of eating disorders, again, this is just from a layperson who's done a little research on this stuff, but, you know, it's a control issue, right? And so promoting it as something that you think is good for you is part of the illness. And, you know, finding a community of people who buy that with you or believe that with you because, you know, your close friends are sad and worried about you, you know, like, probably helps you get through. But it's a very insidious illness. So anything we can do to try to, you know, combat exposure to, you know, things that might, you know, further complicate it. I applaud efforts to do it. Whether it's possible, I don't know. But just by doing this, though, I think we're raising awareness to parents, we're raising awareness to educators, to people who work with kids, that, you know, there's obviously enough of a need for them to do it.
Krista Carnes, our social media consultant, is here. Here's my question about this, Krista, because we've seen this in other types of videos, maybe not in eating disorders. But now that YouTube has cracked down on this, you had sort of insinuated before that a lot of times it's to make a profit. You know, people who make these promotional videos, it's because they're making money on the other end. They don't really care what it's doing to the people viewing it. So do you fear when YouTube cracks down on these kinds of videos that companies will get smarter, or the people producing those videos will get smarter? They look like they're documentary style, or they look like they're educational, but, you know, inside of them, actually, the content could become more promotional or could become very dangerous. Do you worry about that?
I guess as much as I worry about a lot of content out there, to be honest, I do want to clarify, I don't think that all of that content is driven by, you know, profit.
Of course, right.
You know, some of it may just be, you know, searching for community, but I think there's, it's really hard to discern sometimes, and you have to just, I think, play it cautiously. I think people will find a way. I think there's other platforms that people will move to, because remember, this again is, it's about data, right? So I think we talked about this last year, actually. TikTok's algorithms will take you into a rabbit hole, you could Google, weight loss, somebody might want to lose a few pounds and get healthier, but very quickly by clicking a few links, you're sending all this data and to any platform to let them know this is what you're looking for. So you're going to start seeing more content, which is going to reinforce, which is going to, that's the bigger thing that I think we have to worry about. I don't know how we combat that, but that's the real problem. But I do think, will they get smarter? I don't know. Are we going to get smarter? Because that's right. Part of it's where we put our money. Part of it's where we put our attention. Part of it's, how much, oxygen we give some of these things. And, but if you're in a crisis with your teenager, I think limiting all social media at this point is probably a nice, healthy first step. I'm not a psychologist, but, that's really hard to do, too. So,
yeah.
I think awareness is what's going to ultimately make the biggest difference, but people will probably try to get around this to some degree, and that's to be expected, too.
Yeah, no question. Krista Carnes, always appreciate getting your perspective on this and your expertise, and I'm sure we'll talk again in a couple weeks.
All right. Thanks, Melissa.
All right. Krista Carnes, our social media consultant. And Krista also brings up a good point, which is whether it's eating disorders or anything that's being shared on social media platforms. I think it's so important that we as parents or adults, if you've got kids in the house, that you're having those conversations. You're not just monitoring, but you're saying, please feel like you can come to me or create a network of people that your kid can go to, because these are questions that are going to come up. And like we talked about earlier in the show, if things like domestic violence or, feelings in a relationship or health questions, or I heard something at school, if your kids don't feel comfortable approaching you as the parents, it's so important that we try to eliminate having an ego and saying, well, I have to be the one that solves this. No, you don't. I'd rather know that my kid feels safe going to someone who's a reputable person, whether that's a trusted friend or a family friend or an aunt or uncle, somebody who I know has my child's best interest at heart, and having those conversations versus ever going to the outside world, because you just never know people's intentions. I think you know your friends or your family friends or your family members' intentions when it comes to your kids. You'll never know the intentions of the internet or the people they talk to every day. So, think about promoting that for your kids to network and talk to people you trust, even if it's not you and your spouse maybe at first. That's okay. So something else to think about. The last time we talked to AAA, we were talking extensively about electric vehicles. And interestingly enough, AAA Northeast just had their first report come out that is an environmental, social, and governance report. And I want to see what it says. So Fran Mako is back on the show with us to give us the latest on this. Hey, Fran, how are you?
Very good. How are you and everybody out in radio land?
I think we're all doing okay. Yeah, thank you for asking. Appreciate it. First of all, Fran, tell us about this report. What is it? And my understanding is the first time that AAA has conducted one of these.
Sure. A little background. In recent years, many companies like BJ's and Prudential, Eversource, they've been issuing what is called an environmental, social, and governance report. Excuse me, I can't talk.
That's okay.
This
That's me every
is
day.
Like an annual report that focuses on, but rather than focus on a company's financial state, because AAA is a not-for-profit and we don't file annual reports, it focuses on environmental standards, the way we support our communities, where we serve, where we have business, finally, and how we conduct business with a high standard of integrity.
Interesting.
So this, we call it the ESG report because it's environmental, society, social and governance, and we've issued it to our stakeholders, people in government, lawmakers. It's available to members through a website, and it all goes back to AAA's slogan, which is safety, security, and peace of mind. And in that report, we focus on what we've done mm-hmm. and where we're going in terms of the three factors, the environment, society, and governance.
So tell me, Fran, what are some of the highlights? What came out of this report? And who conducted it?
It was conducted by employees, internal, okay. you know, our internal employees, along with an outside vendor who has experience in this area. It's been more than a year in the making because it's a huge inventory of what we've done, where we've been, and where we are going. Mm-hmm. Of the report, personally, I think the most interesting aspect is the environmental aspect in the wake of climate change and, you know, the national transition to electric vehicles mm-hmm. and the need for companies in general to reduce their carbon footprint. So we set a set of environmental goals to reduce our carbon emissions across the organization by 2045. It's an ambitious goal. And we cover 5 states. AAA Northeast covers 5 states. And by 2045, we want to achieve net zero carbon emissions.
It's a lofty goal, but it's not one that, listen, but you got to shoot for the stars and see
yes,
how close you get.
And to tell you the truth, I had to look that up because people go to me, what does that mean? And I was like, well, that's a very good question. Basically, it means we have a target to negate the amount of greenhouse gases our business produces mm-hmm. by reducing emissions through various actions.
So when you say that, though, really quickly, Fran, we're talking to Fran Mako of AAA. When you say eliminating those gases, for example, are you talking about literally every vehicle that is used by the AAA Northeast, which is across all 5 states? Are you talking
yes.
making those all environmental friendly, so electric vehicles that for AAA when you're called because your car is pulled over on the side of the road or something? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes. Now,
okay.
It doesn't mean we are eliminating all our gasoline-powered vehicles. We definitely are eliminating diesel-powered vehicles.
Okay.
But we are converting most of our fleet to electric vehicles.
Interesting.
And by 2024, that's next year, we're going to eliminate all our diesel use in our fleet.
So are you guys on track to do that just because 2024 is right around the corner?
Well, so far, we've eliminated 50%
wow.
of the vehicles. So it's an ambitious goal.
Yeah.
We're probably still going to have some gasoline-powered vehicles mm-hmm. in the fleet because it's very hard to make the conversion. Plus, everyone and his mother, so to speak, is doing this. So a lot of the EVs are on back order. So it's a matter of waiting for those vehicles to arrive at the fleet.
Well, and another thing too, Fran, that would be of concern, at least if I were at AAA, that we learned from one of your fellow colleagues at AAA, is that we still are in a place where we don't feel the entire country is up to standard or up to snuff with having charging stations. And sometimes AAA is called to some really funky spots. You know what I mean? Like there are times where you're broken down. And the reason that AAA shows up is because there's not a gas station for miles and miles and miles. So that could be a real risk to the driver going out if, God forbid, they're there and then they need a charging station and they're now stranded. I would think that would put AAA in a tight spot.
True. We have an electric battery van.
Okay.
That can go out. But let me say a few things. First,
yeah.
EV owners are pretty savvy. They generally don't run out of juice. They know exactly how far their range is. But things happen mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an electric vehicle and you die on I-95, we're not going to send our electric battery van up there to charge you for a half hour. It's too dangerous.
Right.
We are going to tow you to either a safe area, or if you want to go to a charging station or home, wherever you choose. If you decide that you want us to charge you, we will bring you to a safe area and charge you there.
And but what does that mean
for
your
fleet, though?
From what
I understand, it takes about 30 minutes, 40
okay.
minutes. So do you want to really spend 40 minutes on the side of the road with us?
Right. Well,
posing that question.
No, but it's true. And I guess that's where it poses the question of, you know, we don't have that data, I would think, yet, but like how common would that be for a, let's say, a AAA, you know, I'm going to call it a rescue or a tow truck driver who's using an EV. Let's say they run out of power. I mean, are the chances of that? What you're saying is your drivers are very educated. They know this stuff. They're savvy. The chances of them running out of power with an EV is almost as likely as if they were to need to jump start their car if they had a regular gas powered vehicle. Is that I'm kind of getting that sense from you that's not really a worry.
I would say the chances are relatively low.
Interesting.
However,
okay.
It's available, and because our membership is changing, the world is changing. I mean, the world is converting to electric vehicles, and of course, there's going to be a transitionary period here. Who knows? It's going to be a lengthy transitionary period where people are going to still be driving gas-powered cars, even though at one point in time, you can only buy an electric vehicle. So what we're doing is making the options available to our members.
They want to eliminate all diesel-powered vehicles by next year for AAA Northeast. And they are hoping to, for the most part, not 100%, but for the most part, really transition into electric vehicles. Do you worry, though, because electric vehicles and the transition to them and so many things still not up to par, like I said, charging stations, making them more affordable, people having questions about if it really helps the environment, all that. They're very controversial. So do you worry at all? Does AAA worry at all about like membership dropping?
Well, you have to understand that environmental stewardship is the goal of many businesses. This is how businesses are going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are government mandates, federal requirements, and if you as a business don't change, you are certainly going to lose members or customers or clients or, you know, whoever your customer base is. We're giving options to our varied membership base. So if you have electric vehicles, you have that option to, if you need roadside assistance, I mean, electric vehicles are mechanical. They break down, so they may need a tow. You certainly may need a flat tire changed. I mean, the only thing that is different between EVs and gas-powered is the fuel. So we are making these options available to our members.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you spoke with Alec a couple weeks ago,
yep.
And he talked about this EV website that we had. Again, we want people to understand that we are the unbiased source. We are providing information to people interested or potential buyers of electric vehicles. We take no position. We put the information out there, and we advise or allow the member to choose. You know, this is all part of the future, you know, and again, the fleet is just one aspect of the environmental portion of this report. We're converting our buildings, our facilities across our footprint to 100% renewable energy by 2035.
What does that mean?
If we can, we will convert to solar. Where we
interesting.
Certainly going to install more efficient HVAC systems and LED lighting.
Talking about your facilities, all the
yes.
AAA facilities? Got it.
Yes.
Wow.
And as of 2022, 60% of our buildings have made some kind of transition to energy conservation.
Wow.
You know, personally, I think that's long overdue. See, I came from United Illuminating. That was my previous job.
Right.
And
so
we
you're
did
used
that
to this.
All the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, you know, you don't have LED lighting here.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are some things that it's almost embarrassing. Like when Eversource has to come on and I talk to Mitch Gross and he's like, hey, if you could just change your light bulbs. And I'm like, man, we still got to remind folks to do that. Like, come on, this is going to a different section of a Home Depot and grabbing the right light bulbs. I can't believe we even sell the other light bulbs at this point. Like, just get them out of here. I don't know. But I agree with you. There are some things that just are archaic. Like, come on, this is a simple switch. Yeah.
I mean, we're implementing a full-blown recycling program. That means we're converting paper documents. There are very few paper documents anymore. No more printing. I know people come in, they want a triptych. We still do triptychs for people, but we are urging people to go online to do their own triptychs and print out their own triptychs if they need be, but everything is digital. We have digital membership, where, you know, your membership is card is on your phone.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that. Yep.
Yeah, we don't print all the, you know, supporting documentation. We have an app, a roadside assistance app, which I have to say is the greatest thing since sliced bread. So if you need roadside assistance, use the app. It's faster. It's easier. You can track where the truck is while you're waiting for, you know, assistance wherever you are. The world is changing, and it's not only AAA, it's other companies, because despite what a lot of people think, climate change is real. I mean, we do have to reduce our carbon footprints.
Right, the world is dying. The world is dying, and we got to take care of it. Yeah.
So all this, it's kind of exciting. I mean, if people want to look at the report, they can go to AAA.com/ESG. It's, you know, it's pretty simple to read. It's about 35 pages, lots of graphics. So it's the first time we've actually laid out our plan. You know, it talks about what we do in our communities. You know, volunteerism. I thought, again, going back to my old company, they're probably going to kill me at UI. But I always thought UI was pretty strong in the volunteer area where, you know, its employees get involved in. Can't hold a candle to AAA. I mean, our employees are very much involved in communities. And, in fact, the company went so far as to give us volunteer time off.
Wow.
So, if I decide I want to do something for, I don't know, the Bethel shelter in Milford for a day, I can take the day, I can get paid for it, and I could help them out for the day.
Wow.
Or the food bank, which I've done.
That's interesting. Thank you for this. I learned an awful lot. Thank you, Fran.
So go to AAA.com/ESG, and you could download the report if you wish.